Okay, good morning. Let's, are there any announcements before we begin? None? Okay, let's start with Pledge of Allegiance, if you would please join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We'll start with roll call and introductions. To my left,
Ryan Sumberg, Humboldt County.
Greg Giusti, Ukiah, Mendocino County.
Hector Bedoya, the Healdsburg area of Sonoma County.
Alex Hart, Siskiyou County.
Jake McKenzie, City of Runner Park, southernmost city in this region.
Thank you. Valerie, if you would.
Good morning. I'm Valerie Quinto, Executive Officer. To my right is Nathan Jacobson, Counsel to the Board. Sitting to my left will be Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer. Our other Assistant Executive Officer, Josh Curtis, is on Zoom today. And Deidre Wilkerson, our Executive Assistant, is sitting across from me. And other staff will introduce themselves as their items come up. Thank you.
All right. We begin with the public hearing. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so all participants, please speak clearly. Members of the public who wish to observe or to address the board may join the meeting at the noticed physical location or may use the Zoom application to address the board from a remote location. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available at www.cal-span.org. In addition, we're receiving presentations from the public and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment or think you might be interested in commenting, you should already be in the Zoom meeting room using the meeting ID and the password you received from the clerk. If you've not already received the meeting ID and the password, you can go to our website at www.waterboards.ca.gov/North Coast. Click on the May 7th through 8th, 2025 board meeting button and follow the instructions to complete a virtual speaker card. You will then receive an email from the clerk with the Zoom login information. For anyone here in the meeting room that wishes to address the board, please complete a speaker card available on the tables outside the boardroom and give it to the clerk. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. The clerk will unmute you when it is your turn to address the board. We will call each commenter by name and then unmute each commenter. I would like to ask those who have provided a contact name to please state your name for the record before you speak. There is a normal 5-minute time limit for each commenter. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will run the timer and let you know when you have 30 seconds left or when your time is up. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are called upon during public comment. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. All right. This is the time and place for the meeting to consider issuance of investigative order and time schedule order to Sexton Properties LLC, the discharger. The investigative and time schedule order is set forth a series of compliance tasks and dates based on the discharger's alleged failure to comply with the cleanup and abatement investigative order. Order number R1-2023-0054. The order would require the discharger to complete actions to clean up and abate impacts and threatened impacts to waters of the state on the discharger's property. The time schedule order prescribes civil penalties that may be assessed if the discharger does not comply with the order requirements. The board would only assess these penalties following issuance of an administrative civil liability complaint and subsequent hearing on the complaint. This hearing will be conducted in accordance, bless you, with the notice of public hearing and procedures document that was issued and instructions provided today. In this matter, we have separated the functions of staff between those who are acting in a prosecutorial role and will be presenting the proposed order and evidence for the board's consideration, and those who will advise the board in its consideration of this matter. All parties are subject to the same applicable rules and regulations, including the prohibition on ex parte communication with the board members and the advisory team. The advisory team for this matter includes board's executive director, Valerie Quinto, and counsel to the board, Nate Jacobson. The prosecution team and other parties will introduce themselves as the hearing proceeds. This hearing is being conducted in both in person and via Zoom, via a video conference. During this hearing, the board will consider relevant testimony, evidence and testimony to decide whether to issue a final order. The prosecution team has submitted a proposed order for the board consideration. Sexton LLC did not submit a proposed order, argument, or evidence for the board's consideration. Generally, the order of the hearing will be as follows. 1, opening statements. 2, prosecution team's case presentation and direct testimony from witnesses. 3, cross-examination of prosecution witnesses. 4, Sexton LLC case presentation and direct testimony from witnesses. 5, cross-examination of Sexton LLC witnesses. 6, prosecution's rebuttal and Sexton LLC rebuttal as necessary. 7, closing arguments. 8, public comments, if any. Following the conclusion of the parties' cases and any members of the public wishing to give non-evidentiary policy statements will have 5 minutes to do so. And 9, board deliberation and consideration of order. The board may meet in closed session to deliberate on this matter. Is Sexton LLC attending the hearing? No, okay. If not, we will proceed directly from the prosecution's case to board discussion and comments from interested persons. In this order of proceedings acceptable or is this order or of proceedings acceptable, or do the parties have any questions?
We find it acceptable.
Thank you. I remind you that each of these elements is at your discretion and subject to your time limit. Each witness that the parties intend to call will be required to take an oath. For those planning to give testimony, please stand now and take the following oath. Do you swear the testimony you are about to give is the truth? Thank you. Prior to testifying, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath. As was stated in the hearing procedure, each party will be allowed a total of 60 minutes. Neither party requested additional time, and the parties may use their time as they choose. I may modify these procedures and time allocations as needed and upon request for good cause. Board members or any of the members of the advisory team may ask questions at any time. The timer will stop for procedural discussions, questions from the board members or the advisory team, and other causes such as technical issues. The timer will show time left to each party. Are there any other matters from the parties or the advisory team before we begin?
No.
I would like to ask the parties now whether they would like to make an opening statement. If so, we will begin with opening statements from the prosecution team.
Yes, I'll give an opening statement. Good morning, Chair Bedoya, Board members, I'm Kason Grady, Supervising Water Resource Control Engineer, Supervisor of the Agriculture and Enforcement Division of your staff, and I've taken the oath. I'll note that it appears that this case is uncontested by the respondent. Nonetheless, the prosecution team has a presentation and to provide an overview of the case history, especially since this is the first use of a 13308 time schedule order in the cannabis program following the December cannabis enforcement strategy. So I'm here with other members of the prosecution team, including our lead prosecutor, Claudia Villacorta, and we also have Jordan Zachariah and Gary Dickinson, the lead technical staff of the case, and Heather Jitkoff, our counsel. We're here today to propose that you adopt time schedule order for Sexton Properties LLC, who we may refer to as the respondent. So the evidence in the record and summarized in staff's presentation today will demonstrate that the respondent has failed to comply with order number R1-2023-0054, which is a cleanup and abatement order and investigative order. And we issued that to the respondent as the owner of the property. To address this noncompliance, the prosecution team proposes that the board adopt this time schedule and investigative order, which simultaneously gives the respondent more time to comply with the new deadlines in the time schedule order, as well as prescribes a penalty that would apply if the respondent fails to comply with the new deadlines. In our presentation, staff will provide an overview of the site, a review of the site history, and will detail how the respondent's violations of the cleanup order are ongoing violations to this day and warrant adoption of the time schedule order. But before doing so, I want to give a brief overview of the cannabis program enforcement strategy, again, because this is the first use of this tool within that strategy. So I presented the strategy in December of last year. And go to the next slide. And in that strategy, we highlighted several challenges for the enforcement program, including the large number of both legal and illegal sites in the program, the limited staff resources that we have, and the length of time to issue enforcement actions, in particular with administrative civil liability complaints. Staff also emphasized our primary goal of getting sites cleaned up to address both discharges and threats of waste discharge for the protection of water quality. And in light of these factors, we also propose the use of time schedule orders. And there's two categories here of the types of cases that might apply for the use of these types of time schedule orders. And this first category is the one that's applicable to the case here before you today, and that involves older cleanup orders where reestablishing new deadlines through a time schedule will hopefully facilitate engagement and facilitate progress towards cleanup. And these types of older cleanup abatement orders, if we were to proceed to a complaint, would very likely result in very significant penalties. And our goal is to prioritize the cleanup, and therefore this is the appropriate tool. The second category of case is where somebody has mostly complied with an order and providing new deadlines with potential penalties tied to those new deadlines will hopefully incentivize the respondents to, or the responsible parties to finish the work and get the job done. I mentioned that just as a refresher. So I want to get a little bit more into what a TSO is. And it is issued pursuant to the Water Board's authority under Water Code Section 13308. And these orders can only be issued if there are threatened or continuing violations of existing enforcement orders. And in this case, the existing enforcement order is a cleanup and abatement order. And these time schedule orders are designed to compel a responsible party to take corrective action by establishing new time schedules with prescribed penalties that would only be imposed if there is future noncompliance with a newly established time schedule. It's important to note that by prescribing a penalty today, the board would not be issuing a penalty today, but rather would just be putting the respondent on notice that if they fail to comply with the deadlines, this is what the penalty would look like, and this is how it would come about. And so if the respondent fails to comply with these new deadlines, the penalty would not be automatically imposed. The assistant executive officer would still have to bring a complaint to the board and seeking that the board impose the penalty. And the board would have to then consider issuance of that penalty at that time after consideration of any adjustment factors at that time. Unlike other penalties that the board normally considers, it's really important to note that the penalties prescribed by these 13308 time schedule orders must be based on the amount reasonably necessary to bring a party into compliance and for them to achieve compliance. In this case, the amount reasonably necessary for them to comply with the cleanup order and clean up their site.
Kason, can I ask a question?
Correct.
How long has this Water Code Section 13308 been in existence?
I don't know the answer to that directly, but it's been a while.
Good morning. My name is Heather Jidkov, attorney for the prosecution team. I'm not aware of the exact date that it came about. This isn't a new tool, but it is a new tool that we're using in this program.
Okay.
I would say decades.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, is there any evidence at all of the respondent? From what I've read, Saxton and Mr. Saxton don't seem to have responded to anything at all in the whole course of this case that you're bringing in front of us. Does that entity still exist?
We plan to get into that in hopefully sufficient detail for the board in the presentation, but I will summarize and say that there's two parties here, right? There's Fritz Sexton, who's the managing member of Sexton Properties LLC. To our knowledge, Fritz Sexton is still a real person. He's still alive and has an address in, I believe, McKinleyville, California. And Sexton Properties LLC, throughout this process, was terminated or attempted to be terminated by Fritz Sexton. And we'll have to get into the details of why that doesn't absolve either Mr. Sexton or Sexton Properties LLC from their responsibility to do the cleanup, because ultimately dissolution or termination of an LLC, the LLC still remains responsible for its assets through the process of distributing those assets, as well as for enforcement purposes. But we can get into that some more.
I'll look forward to the explanation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Kason. I don't know if I missed it in this first part or if you're going to get to it, but if they haven't responded to anything so far, did you explain why we're giving them more time?
I haven't yet, but I think that's a really great question, and it is somewhat the crux of the issue, especially when we compare it to a case like yesterday, right? And we look at the strategy and holistically, the strategy is to proceed quickly through the enforcement process and more immediately to penalty in these cases. This case is part of a category of older cases, even though it may be more recent for Fritz Sexton and Sexton Properties LLC, it dates back to 2020, and I'll get to that in a subsequent slide. And I think one of the pieces that I'm just about to get to now is the overall scope of the penalty would be so large if we were to go straight to complaint for the CAO, it would likely be in the millions of dollars. And so in order to be consistent with our strategy of prioritizing cleanup, we thought it was appropriate to give them one more opportunity. We have one more construction season this season. Give them a chance and point out to them that the cost of bringing the site into compliance is about $200,000. And so that's very substantial. There's a very significant need for cleanup. And for that reason, Gary's going to show you a bunch of pictures that are frankly not ultimately necessary for the paperwork violation of the need to issue a time schedule order. But it really gives the context of the importance of the cleanup, which is why ultimately we're proposing to give a little bit more time.
I understand. However, I think, 90% of these farms just have gone belly up, and the price of cannabis has gone so far down that they can't make money off of it anymore. So getting them to pay $200,000 when they can't make any money off of it is not going to happen. So I'm 95% sure that this is like we're going to do two meetings and the same thing is going to happen because they're not responding. They're obviously – they've had plenty of time to come in and say, hey, let's negotiate this. How can we work this out? And you get nothing. That means they're gone. They're just not in business anymore. So.
I hear that, and I can't disagree. One thing to add to that is that Gary will point out that Dobrev Capital LLC developed the site for cannabis cultivation, but then got caught during the development that he was doing work illegally without permits, and not protective of water quality. When he sold the property, there's not been any cultivation on site, as far as I know. So it's included in the cannabis enforcement strategy because it started out that way. The water quality threats and impacts are a result of site development for cannabis cultivation, but now it's owned by somebody that I don't have any indication is associated with cannabis, so I don't think that it's, there's a twist to it.
Regardless, the sooner you could lien the property, the better.
I agree. And if the board, after the presentation has feedback on, cases like this might be better to go straight to penalty, we would welcome that sort of feedback. As this was our approach. So, I'll proceed with my presentation. So right now I'm still giving an overview of, what TSOs are, and there's these three factors. The penalty cannot be more than what would achieve compliance. In this case, what it would cost to submit plans and actually clean up the property. It may not include any amount intended to punish or redress the violations, and it may not exceed $10,000 for each day in which the violation occurs. Before I get to the timeline, I want to contrast those three factors to the more standard process that we've been using of issuing complaints for penalties of the claim and abatement order directly. And in contrast, that process would not be bound by those three requirements. So instead, issuance of a complaint follows the standard enforcement process methodology that you're all aware of. And since there has been collectively over 1,700 days of violation of this claim and abatement order, it's one of our older cases in that regard, the process would likely result in a penalty that's over $1 million. So instead of going down that path, we're proposing a time schedule order with effectively a cap on the penalty at the cost of compliance, with hopes that might incentivize some cleanup. We'll have to see. So with that, I'm going to give a short timeline, history of the case. This gives you that context of why we are considering it an older site in this regard.
Just one question up for you, but Counselor, this is a good example. You say it's, how many days did you say that the CAO?
1,700.
I mean, it's possible that just running the $10,000 a day, is that you could come up with a number where the penalty is higher than the value of the land. Does that come into consideration? Not so much setting the penalty, but, you know, in terms of a $10 million settlement and the property's worth $5 million. Mm-hmm. That discrepancy, how should we or could we deal with that? Because there's no incentive. Then you've lost the incentive because walking away from it's cheaper than paying the penalty.
Well, yeah, so just to keep in mind that there are maximum penalty amounts as authorized by statute, and then there are proposed penalty amounts that the prosecution team is asking the board to impose, and then there's ultimately the penalty that the board decides to impose. And that difference between the maximum and what the board, you know, there's a wide range of latitude and flexibility in the board's discretion determining what the ultimate final penalty should be after considering all the factors that the board can consider in a penalty case consistent with the enforcement policy. And the board has done that in previous cases, has adjusted penalty amounts based on the evidence that the board considered and the factors that the board can apply. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but we've got a maximum penalty. And then we've got the penalty that the board ultimately decides to impose. And the board may consider circumstances or factors like what you described in terms of a penalty that is maybe so out of proportion to what the assets are. There might be factors of justice that the board can consider in setting a penalty. So. So I think that, you know, the board's not bound to a maximum penalty that might be imposed.
The twist was that Mr. Sexton, to your knowledge, has not been involved in cannabis cultivation.
On this property.
So, but he bought a problem. And I'm trying to, you know, again, I appreciate what all of this TSO approach. I very much support that. But he's... In terms of incentivization, he's paying for somebody else's past mistakes, and obviously he's trying to, you know, wash his hands of it. But that was a twist that you threw out, and I was trying to think: well, are we incentivizing this process with someone that really just wants to get out of it and bought a problem? And if at some point, you know, I think we have to be cautious as a board that. If the penalty is worth more than the property, is higher value than the property, that's not an incentive either. So I'm just thinking out loud. I'm trying to process everything that I've read and that you're sharing. So I don't mean to ramble, but as I said, I'm just trying to process.
Thank you.
I think the most likely scenario is he bought a property that had a cannabis permit. So he was intending to grow. The bottom fell out after he bought the property. It's costing more to grow than it is to what you can sell it for, and so he hasn't grown anything. I'm pretty sure that's probably the likely scenario.
But with thousands of properties being out there with illegal grows or requiring cleanup, the sooner you address them, the better.
Exactly.
Because they're just compounding the penalty.
Yeah, and I think that this... go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to suggest that the board have the chance to hear the full evidence presentation before making policy statements about the action, and just have the chance to hear the full case before getting into deliberations about what might be appropriate action. That's my recommendation and suggestion.
Board?
Oh, absolutely.
We shall follow your recommendation.
I am looking forward to it.
I want to see the whole presentation, but I really want to add into some points that they've made, let's get through your presentation,
okay. Because
I think we're in a similar vein up here.
We'll behave. Yeah.
All right, so I will start the timeline consideration, give you some background of why this is an older case. Arguably why, you know, if this case had started over after this strategy, we would probably proceed directly to penalty. But given part of the intent of the strategy is to allow us to move these older cases along in a strategic way. So the property was first inspected in March of 2020, and at that time the property was owned by Dobrev Capital LLC. And that owner had conducted the grading and land disturbance activities for the purpose of preparing the site for cannabis cultivation. That purpose was further demonstrated by Dobrev Capital LLC enrolling in our cannabis general order after the site inspection. Between March 2020 and May of 2021, staff communicated with Dobrev Capital LLC about issues on the property, including transmittal of a notice of violation and subsequently conducting a consent inspection. But the issues at the property remained. On May of 2021, the board issued cleanup and abatement investigative order R1-2021-0029 to Dobrev Capital LLC, which required, in part, submittal and implementation of a restoration plan to resolve the discharges and threats of discharges at the site. Dobrev Capital LLC submitted several plans which were approved by the board in March of 2022. And I want to pause here and just note that I've put these timeline bullets in gray just to acknowledge that we consider these kind of background. And from here, on October 21st, 2022, while staff was requesting an update on the status of implementation of the Dobrev plan, Mr. Dobrev informed staff that he sold the property to the respondent on August of 2022. So based on the unresolved actions needed at the site, on October of 2023, the board issued the cleanup order now to the respondent as the new owner of the site. Since issuance of the cleanup order, staff has received no response from the respondent, no or any evidence of corrective actions taken by the respondent. So even though the prior owner partially complied with their order by getting an approved plan, those efforts cannot be attributed to Sexton Properties LLC. In fact, we understand that the respondent has terminated the LLC in an attempt to avoid cleanup, and that is an important aspect of this case to make cannabis growers as well, you know, just really point out that flipping a property does not absolve you of responsibility to do the cleanup. And frankly, when you buy a property, it's your responsibility through the purchase process to do your due diligence, because when you purchase a site with cleanup requirements, that those requirements will be imposed on future landowners. Yes.
So if there's an LLC that owns a property and then they cancel the LLC, does that revert back to the person who owned the LLC before? Is that how that works?
I'm just trying to follow your question, because
I guess the question is, once you cancel an LLC, who becomes the property owner?
So as part of the cancellation process, they're supposed to wind up their assets. The certificate of cancellation that Mr. Sexton filed for the respondent had cited the Corporations Code Section 17707.06, lots of numbers, and that essentially identified the exceptions to the termination of their rights and powers. And Subdivision A of that section specifies that the company continues to exist for certain purposes, and those include for the purpose of prosecuting and defending actions by or against it, in order to collect or discharge obligations. And so as part of that, they are expected to discharge their obligations and get rid of their assets. But from the recent searches we've done, the company still owns this property. So although they've filed that certificate of cancellation, this company does seem to still exist. It still holds this property. And then, as Mr. Grady mentioned earlier, that section of the Corporations Code does also specify that no action or proceeding to which that company is a party abates by the filing of that certificate of cancellation. So essentially, although Mr. Sexton filed that certificate of cancellation, he was still, or the respondent, the company, was still subject to its obligations under the cleanup and abatement order that had been issued to it prior to the filing of that termination.
Yeah. I just need, quick clarification. Dobrev is not in a capital LLC. There's no relation to the Sexton. I mean, totally separate entities. There's no similarity. Okay. And is this just part of the policy, our policy, the cannabis policy? Why, as of the notice of, when we get a notice of a property sale with a property that has had these issues, a cleanup and an abatement order, why do we not file a lien at that time, right when you get notice of a sale? Why do we not notify title?
Well, unfortunately, we can't move directly to a lien until we issue a penalty, and then that penalty goes unpaid.
Okay, thank you.
Just one question that might be helpful for the board in their consideration of this is, are there any known other partners to the LLC besides Fritz Sexton?
Mr. No. Sexton is listed as the sole manager and member of the LLC.
Well, I'll ask the question now. Ms. McCready is named as an agent, and she received a lot of your correspondence through all of this process. Connect the dots for me. Does she have any liabilities in any of this, or she was just a innocent bystander that was doing work for Mr. Sexton? How does she play into this discussion at all?
Excellent question. So her position is the agent for service of process, and we identified her as such through the filings that are on the Secretary of State website. And the role of the agent, they don't necessarily have any control over the actions of the company. Their role is to accept mail on behalf of the company so that anyone trying to satisfy service can do so by delivering documents to Ms. McCready. So she would not have any individual liability stemming from the obligations of the company.
And according to our briefing, she's resigned. I mean, she too has walked away from this.
She has.
Seeing yes. that. She doesn't want her fingerprints on it. So, okay, thank you. That helps.
I'm going to have another follow-up. So is there any legal vehicle or means that we have in our policy to where I get these terms mixed up, so I understand it was just an order, but you get the notice of property sale. What do we do? What, at that point, what do you do when you get that notice? Do you send a letter saying, hey, this is a violation. If it goes unpaid, it's going to move to I just feel like there's a big hole here that maybe might be applicable in other cases where it's like we could expedite some of this or maybe solve some of these problems that we're getting. It seems like a big goose egg at this point that we get a notice of property sale. Then what? We're just sitting on our laurels here.
So in this case, we got the notice of the property sale, and we proceeded to work with the new property owner to try to get the site cleaned up. That is the strategy that was taken in this case. We do have other cases, in fact, ones that we anticipate bringing to the board very soon, perhaps in August. But the other cases include, if we back up in time to we get this notice of property sale, at that point in time, we could hold Dobrev Capital LLC accountable and for violation of the cleanup order by not implementing the cleanup order consistent with the deadlines. So at that point in time, they had submitted and got an approved plan, but they never followed through with implementation of the plan. So we very well could, enforce upon the prior owner. And it's important to say in this case that we still could, that Dobrev Capital LLC still has a cleanup and abatement order that's active and valid for them. And we could proceed with an enforcement case against them. We have decided to try to work with the new landowner to obtain cleanup, and they've ignored us. And so we've proceeded with an enforcement case prioritizing cleanup by, you know, proceeding today with a time schedule order, give them more time, give them one last chance and one warning. And if they fail to comply, we could bring an ACLC to Sexton Properties LLC this fall. We could simultaneously bring a complaint against Dobrev Capital LLC at the same time. I think part of the issue with Dobrev is we were having service issues back, if we go back to 2022. Anyway, we do have other cases where that is happening, and frankly, where we do plan on issuing an enforcement case against an owner that tries to sell, because it's very clear that this is a tactic that growers are using to sell their property to try to avoid responsibility. And the strong message with this case and future cases that we need to make is that selling your property does not get you out of the responsibility to do the cleanup, to comply with Regional Water Board orders, you know, submit plans and do cleanups. So
I'm going to hold off on my response comments because I want to see the rest of it, but we're going to come back to this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Wait a second. I want to make sure I'm on the right. So, yeah, okay. So what the timeline of the previous slide shows is that staff's been trying to get compliance at this site for over 5 years. And it's a regional enforcement priority to enforce on existing enforcement orders. It's a priority of the cannabis enforcement strategy to issue cleanup orders, to prioritize cleanup, and to issue time schedule orders. So the order before you today is intended to achieve both of those goals. Let me go back. By holding the respondent accountable for cleanup and then prescribing this penalty if they fail to comply. So I believe I've touched upon the rest of the points that I wanted to make. So at this point in time, I would hand it over to Gary Dickinson, our lead technical staff, to further describe the background of the case and development of the proposed order.
Good morning, Chair Bedoya and the board members. I'm Gary Dickinson. Good morning, Chair Bedoya and the board members. I'm Gary Dickinson. I'm an engineering geologist and a licensed professional geologist. I have taken the oath this morning. I have been the lead inspector on this case since the initial inspection. This morning, I will provide an overview of the following. What the site conditions were observed during two inspections at the site, transfer of the property, and issue of a cleanup and abatement order to Sexton Properties LLC, the alleged violations of the cleanup order, and development of the proposed order and the calculations of the prescribed penalty.
Quick question, Gary.
Yes.
I'm doing my best to hold back, but have you ever had face-to-face contact with any of the principals of this property, Dobrev or Sexton? Have you ever talked to them face-to-face?
I had never talked face-to-face to either one of them. In the past, I had contact with Dobrev, but not with Sexton.
A phone conversation with Dobrev?
No. No. I had email communications with him, and then he did have a representative that was taking care of the permitting process and things like that, and I had email communications with that person also.
So to the best of your recollection, you never had a verbal exchange with either of the principals that we're talking about?
I have not had verbal with either one.
Thank you.
I would like to add, though.
Mr. Chair, just to follow on this, under subsection 7 in the report that I'm reading here, Water Board staff regarding a September 25th, 2023 conversation they had with Mr. Sexton, and Mr. Sexton stated he had not realized the extent of the violations on the property, the costs, and then basically tried to cut and run. So who was the staff member?
I think that was Fishing Game.
Yeah, that was just what I was about to respond, is that we actually have the Fish and Wildlife staff person who did have direct conversation with Mr. Sexton on the line today on Zoom to answer questions by the board.
Okay, you're right.
So, yes, there has been direct communication with Mr. Sexton. It was one of our colleagues at Fish and Wildlife, and they're available today.
All right. This property is located along Alder Point Road in Blocksburg in Humboldt County. This slide shows an aerial image of the property and the locations of features that were observed during the inspections. The major features I'll point out are the large graded terraces, several water courses, and water course crossing. So I'll specifically point out the features. There is a large terrace, a large graded terrace, Terrace 1, which is located in the center of the property. To the south of that is Terrace 2, which is a larger terrace. And to the west of Terrace 1 is Terrace 3. There is an unnamed Class 2 water course that flows through the center of the property, and it is a tributary of Larrabee Creek, and Larrabee Creek is shown up in the upper right corner. Larrabee Creek is a tributary of the Eel River. Additionally, there are three Class 3 water courses. One of those is located just below Terrace 1. Another one flows to Terrace 2 on the south border of the property. And there is a water course that originates from a spring near Terrace 3. There is a road crossing of the Class 2 water course located between Terrace 1 and Terrace 2. And lastly, there's an on-stream pond on the Class 2 water course that's located on the southwest portion of the site. The property was initially inspected on March 9th, 2020, under the execution of a criminal search warrant. I participated in this inspection. The next several slides contain photos from that inspection to provide background of the site conditions that were intended to be addressed through the cleanup order. The grading activities that were grading activities that will be shown were conducted by Dobrev Capital's ownership and were done without appropriate permits. These images show Terrace 1. The terrace flat area, the terrace flat graded area covers an area of approximately 0.3 acres. The total disturbed area covers, the total disturbed area grading covers approximately 0.7 acres. And that includes the cut slope, the fill slope, and access roads. I'll point out the left photo is taken from an access road that is located above the cut slope, and I will revisit that access road later in the presentation. The image on the right shows the graded terrace flat and the cut slope and a cut slope drainage ditch that's located at the base of the cut slope. As you can see, the cut slope has erosion control measures on it. There are erosion control blankets and straw wattles. However, the graded terrace has no erosion or sediment control measures to prevent sediment from going into the drainage ditch. And as you can see, there is fine sediment in that drainage ditch. And I'll point out that the southern portion of this drainage ditch drains to a roadside ditch relief culvert that discharges to the Class 2 water course.
Jordan.
Jordan.
Gary.
Gary, sorry.
Yes.
Were there any grading permits for any of this?
I'm not certain if there was grading permit for this at the time. I know that it was not permitted by Fish and Wildlife for any of this work or by the regional board for any of the stream work. This photo on the photo on the left shows the fill slope of Terrace 1. At the base of the fill slope is a roadside ditch, and shown in the distance is a ditch relief culvert. To give you an idea of the magnitude of the fill involved, this fill slope is approximately 18 feet tall. The slope is less than 50 feet from a Class 2 water course. As shown, the fill slope has erosion control measures. However, the additional sediment controls are needed along the road edge, shown on the left side of the photo, to prevent sediment discharge to the drainage ditch.
Gary, just to be clear what I'm looking at. So
the
slope, that is discharge from terracing that was done above the slope?
Yeah.
So this was created from the side cast of the terracing up slope?
Yes. These terraces are cut and fill slopes,
mm-hmm.
and so cut slope material is moved and pushed over to be part of the fill slope. But these fill areas are so massive that they had to import material. The material that came from the cut slope they needed more material. So these are
And these fill slopes, were they intended to be terraced and used as planting sites? Or what's the, other than side casting the terrace material, you said they probably brought more in.
Mm-hmm.
What was the intent of doing that?
Well, I can only gauge intent from that they did enroll, they did file an application for the cannabis general order.
Uh-huh.
That shows that they...
They made a mountain. I guess the question is, why did they make that mountain other than to sidecast the terrace material?
Yeah, well, that's just the fill slope edge of the terrace. So they're built. Okay. They just built out that. They had this native sloping property, and they wanted to make a flat, so they built out this terrace.
And then this is... okay.
And then this is just the fill slope as you go down over the edge off the terrace, you know.
Okay, so the planting happens up above this fill slope. The fill slope will not be used for planting.
Right, yeah. I mean, this terrace was installed for cannabis cultivation, but no cannabis was ever cultivated on these terraces. Right.
Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next slide.
No, I haven't been.
I didn't think so.
Okay. The photo on the right shows the ditch relief culvert that's at the base of the fill slope. This culvert captures approximately half of the stormwater flow that would be coming off the terrace graded area. This ditch relief culvert discharges directly to the Class 2 water course. The photo on the left shows the road crossing of the Class 2 water course. This view is the upstream side of the crossing. The road crossing was installed without appropriate permits. As shown, the crossing lacked any erosion or sediment control measures to prevent sediment discharge directly to the stream. The outlet of the previously presented ditch relief culvert is shown to the left of the larger culvert. I will point out the presence of fill material within the stream channel above the large culvert. Stream flow is shown by the blue arrow. As shown in the photo, no water is visible in the stream channel, as the active stream flow is percolating under the fill material. Furthermore, I observed little, if any, stream flow entering the large culvert for the crossing, which means stream flow was continuing beneath the culvert. This indicates that when the culvert was installed, it was not properly aligned with the bottom of the stream channel. The photo on the right is a close-up of the outfall of the ditch relief culvert. As shown, a thick layer of fine sediment is shown within the culvert at the point of discharge to the Class II water course. Again, this culvert captures stormwater flow from the graded areas of Terrace 1. This slide presents the condition of the Class II water course above and below the crossing. I will discuss the photo on the right first. This photo shows the stream channel upstream of the crossing. In this photo, the water in the stream is clear, and it's shown on the right portion of the photo. Also shown in this photo is the fill material located in the stream channel, which is outlined by the red. I will point out the flow of the stream continues beneath and through this fill material as it flows toward the road crossing. Now let's look at the photo on the left. This photo is the downstream culvert, the downstream outlet of the road crossing culvert. As shown, the stream flow is now turbid with fine sediment. In fact, the water is so turbid, the bottom of the culvert and the stream bottom are not visible. The construction of the crossing and the fill material observed in the stream channel are discharging fine sediment to the water course. These images show Terrace 2. This graded terrace flat covered an area of approximately 0.7 acres, and the total disturbed area of the grading was approximately an acre, including the cut and fill slopes. As shown, the terrace surface is unprotected, lacking erosion and sediment control measures to prevent sediment runoff. The photo on the left shows erosion controls on the fill slope in the background. The photo on the right documents tension cracks in the surface of the terrace near the edge of the fill slope. These tension cracks are an indication of instability of the terrace fill. Ultimately, this terrace does fail, as will be shown in later slides. The photo on the left is a view looking down the fill slope of Terrace 2. As shown, erosion controls consist of a thin and patchy cover of loose straw and a single straw wattle. This fill slope lacked appropriate soil stabilization and erosion control measures needed for such a tall and steep fill slope. For reference, the height of this fill slope is approximately 20 feet. The photo on the right is a drainage ditch located at the base of the cut slope at Terrace 2. As shown, erosion control measures were installed for the cut slope. However, there are no sediment control measures for the terrace surface or within the drainage ditch to prevent discharge of sediment. The north section of this drainage ditch discharges directly to the Class II water course immediately above that stream, that road crossing. Next. This photo shows a half-buried barrel used as a water diversion of a spring located near Terrace 3. This is a legacy feature that predates the unpermitted grading activities. Following the March 9th, 2020 inspection, I participated in a consent inspection at the property with Dobiv Capital's consultants on March 26, 2021. Additional issues of concern were noted during this inspection that were intended to be addressed through the cleanup and abatement order. This photo shows the failure of the cut slope at Terrace 1. The red border delineates the area of the failure. The photo also shows that the failed slope has slid downhill and overwhelmed the cut slope drainage ditch. Additionally, fine sediment can be seen within the remaining drainage ditch. This photo shows a different view of the same slope failure at Terrace 1. The drainage from the cut slope ditch is directed toward the hay bale at the bottom of the photo, which is located within the drainage ditch. The ditch continues over the access road, which is in the foreground, prior to discharging to a Class 3 water course. The water course is approximately 40 feet from this slope failure. These photos show the failure of the access road situated above the cut slope at Terrace 1. The photo on the left shows the detachment scarp of the failed slope bordered in the red lines. At the scarp, the road surface dropped approximately 2.5 feet during the 12 months since the 2020 inspection. Next slide. These photos show failures of the cut slopes at Terrace 2. The red border, again, delineates the area of failure. The photo shows the hill slope material has slid down the slope, completely overwhelming the cut slope drainage ditch, as the drainage ditch is no longer present. The photo on the right shows the location of a Class 2 water course, as represented by the blue line. The water course terminates at the graded terrace. Additionally, this photo shows water with fine sediment ponding on the terrace flat due to the cut slope drainage ditch being overwhelmed with the slump material. No erosion control measures were present along the toe of the slump or for the spoil stockpile to prevent mobilization of sediment to the Class 2 water course located approximately 150 feet to the north. This slide presents additional photos of the cut slope failures at Terrace 2. Again, slump material has overwhelmed the cut slope ditch. The photo on the left also shows no erosion or sediment control measures for the terrace flat to prevent sediment from entering the drainage ditch. However, some straw wattles are present in the drainage ditch. The photo on the right shows the Class 3 water course at Terrace 2, as depicted by the blue lines. The water course extends to the terrace flat, where the original alignment of the water course has been altered by the construction of the terrace. As shown in the photo, water flows to the terrace flat where it ponds. These photos show the failure of the terrace flat and fill slope at Terrace 2. The original grade of the terrace is shown by the red line. The terrace flat slumped as much as 5 feet vertically since the prior inspection in 2020, when tension cracks were first observed at this location. The photo on the right shows tension cracks in the failed portion of the terrace, as depicted by the red dashed lines. These cracks indicate that the terrace is unstable, with a high probability for the terrace to continue to fail downslope and potentially discharge sediment to the Class 2 watercourse. To give you an idea of the size of this failure, the dimension of the failure measures 96 feet long by 41 feet wide, and at the edge of the fill slope, the height of the imported fill material is approximately 20 feet. This is a significant amount of unstable material, which is located approximately 170 feet from a Class 2 water course. This photo shows additional tension cracks, shown in red, on the north end of Terrace 2. Again, these cracks are an indication of instability of the terrace. This part of the terrace is located approximately 70 feet from the Class 2 water course, depicted by the blue line. These photos show the dam of an on-stream pond on the Class 2 water course. The dam is a low earthen berm that is approximately 4 to 5 feet in height. The photo on the left is a view of the dam face of the rock spillway of the dam. The red line depicts the top of the dam. Water is shown spilling over the top of this dam. The photo on the right is looking down at the top of the dam. The red line here is the downstream edge of the dam face. This photo shows back cutting of the downstream face of the dam at the point where the stream spills over the dam. Continued back cutting of the dam face would lead to failure of the dam berm, resulting in discharge of sediment accumulated in the pond behind the dam. The dam and the associated pond are legacy features that predate the unpermitted grading activities at the property. You saw an earlier timeline of key elements during Mr. Grady's opening statement. The timeline shown here provides additional detail to explain how we got to where we are now. The photos of the property you've seen today were all documented during Dobrev Capital LLC's ownership. The first two circles of the slide relate to the actions that occurred during that time, which are included as background. Following progressive enforcement, a cleanup order was issued to Dobrev Capital LLC in May 2021. And Dobrev received approval of a restoration plan submitted under that order in March 2022. I emailed Mr. Dobrev requesting updates of the implementation of the plan. Dobrev did not provide any information to suggest the plan had been implemented. However, on October 21st, 2022, Mr. Dobrev did inform me that the property had been sold to Sexton Properties LLC, and he additionally provided me a copy of the deed. That same day, I emailed Fritz Sexton, the respondent's manager, about the property transfer and also provided him a copy of the Dobrev cleanup order and offered my assistance to answer any questions he might have about the actions needed at the site. I received no response. With no evidence to suggest that the discharges and threats of discharges on the property had been addressed, we prepared draft cleanup orders that were transmitted to the respondent between March and September 2023. The multiple attempts were due to delivery issues and changes to the order proposed by staff. In September 2023, I was made aware of a conversation between Mr. Sexton and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, in which Mr. Sexton stated he was considering dissolving the LLC to avoid responsibility for the cleanup. I then emailed Mr. Sexton on October 3rd, 2023, to see if he had any questions or comments on the draft cleanup order. Ultimately, the respondent provided no response, and the final cleanup order was issued on October 13th, 2023.
How does eliminating an LLC, maybe this is a question for council, I'm not understanding this leap between I can dissolve an LLC and not be responsible and eliminate my responsibility for cleanup. What am I missing here?
Well, I think he had a misunderstanding that the dissolution of the LLC could absolve him of responsibility.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Slide 25. This slide details the actions the respondent was required to take to comply with the cleanup order. The actions required submittal and implementation of various plans, including completion of restoration measures by October 31st, 2024. As I will discuss in the next few slides, the respondent has failed to comply with several of these required actions. This slide provides a timeline of the deadlines contained in the cleanup order and staff's actions during this time. The red boxes are the cleanup order deadlines for required actions, and the black circles are the date of staff actions. The two red boxes on the left marked the October 31st, 2023 deadline to submit documentation of winterization measures, and the January 14th, 2024 deadline to submit a restoration plan or intent to use the Dobrev plan. After both deadlines passed with no response from the respondent, we issued a notice of violation on March 7th, 2024. However, delivery of that NOV was unsuccessful. After checking the California Secretary of State website, we learned that Mr. Sexton had filed a notice of termination of the LLC on September 29, 2023. This was shortly after Sexton's conversation with CDFW. Secretary of State records also show the respondent's agent of service of process filed a resignation on October 23, 2023. Just so you know, the agent's role is to accept mail on behalf of the LLC. Based on this information, we issued a revised notice of violation on May 30, 2024, which informed the respondent that termination of the LLC does not change its obligation to comply with the cleanup order. We received no response to this reissued NOV. The red box for Action 3 indicates the deadline to begin implementation of the restoration plan. The red box for Action 5 marked the deadline to complete implementation of the plan. At this time, we had still received no communication from the respondent. As a result, we issued another notice of violation dated November 14, 2024, for the failure to complete implementation of the approved plan. Following that notice, the respondent also missed the December 30, 2024 deadline to submit a completion report, which is indicated by the red box for Action 6. Based on the respondent's continuing violations of the cleanup order, the prosecution team transmitted the proposed order to the respondent on February 18, 2025. The board's authority to issue a time schedule order is established in Water Code Section 13308, which, as Mr. Grady previously stated, required that there be threatened or continued violation of an existing order. This is the same list I previously showed for the required actions of the cleanup order. The five required actions presented in red text are the requirements the respondent has violated and continues to violate. We are proposing a time schedule order for these five requirements. We have not proposed a time schedule order for the two requirements in black text, as these requirements require the respondent to complete a prior action before the requirement arises. However, these actions are requirements that the respondent must still satisfy under Water Code Section 13267. For that reason, we include these actions in the proposed order to provide a full list of the respondent's obligations and deadlines. This slide contains the list of requirements and deadlines that would be established in the proposed order. The deadlines we propose are intended to ensure that the property is restored before the next wet season, as demonstrated by the October 31st, 2025 deadline to complete implementation of an approved restoration plan. Next. The proposed order would also prescribe a penalty that could be imposed if the respondent fails to comply with the time schedule order. This table provides an overview over the requirements, deadlines, and potential penalty amounts specified in the proposed order. The rows in the light blue are the actions that would be subject to the time schedule order with prescribed penalties under Section 13308. The two rows in gray are the requirements the respondent must still satisfy under 13267. These actions do not have prescribed penalties, but would be subject to liability under Section 13268. For the actions with a prescribed penalty, we determined an amount reasonably necessary to achieve compliance by estimating the cost of complying with the requirement and adding 10%, so that the compliance would be the less costly option. For the daily liability amount, we considered the amount cited in the cleanup order and the NOVs for each requirement. Since these amounts were not effective in achieving compliance, we added 10%. These daily liability amounts would only accrue up to the maximum prescribed penalty. I will now walk through the calculation of each of the prescribed penalty amounts in the following slides.
Chair, can we take a 5-minute break before he steps through the calculations? Thank you.
If it's all right with you, we'll take 15 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're back from the break. We have two announcements. This morning I saw, I won't even say that. Ryan has an announcement to make.
Yes, I wanted to disclose an ex parte communication. I just received a text message from Mr. Sexton during the hearing, expressing a willingness to work with staff, and he provided a phone number to provide to you guys. That's all I have.
Thank you. And I just read an announcement that there was a selection of a pope, and he's an American.
Thank you.
So please proceed.
I will now walk through the calculation of each of the prescribed penalty amounts in the following slides. The cost of preparing a restoration plan was previously estimated in the cleanup order based on similar costs from the 2017 direct cost analysis, which estimated the cost of plans required under the cannabis general order. I selected the median cost from the range in the cleanup order. After adjusting for inflation and adding 10%, the prescribed penalty was calculated to be $10,819, which would accrue at a daily rate of $1,100 up to the maximum prescribed penalty. For the implementation of the plan, I considered the scope of work detailed in the approved DOBREV plans. Although the respondent may choose to submit and implement a new plan, the DOBREV plans provide an example of the scope of work for purposes of estimating the cost of compliance. The scope of work for the DOBREV plans included the following actions: restore the graded terrace areas to native grade, restore the Class 3 water course that was altered at Terrace 2, upgrade a rock-lined spillway on the on-stream pond, and removal of a water diversion spring box. I calculated the cost of the materials and labor for these actions. Additionally, I considered the cost of permits that would be required for the work, which include a lake and stream bed alteration agreement, a 401 water quality certification, and a grading permit. For calculating these costs, I added 10%. The maximum prescribed penalty for this requirement would be $184,011, which would accrue at a daily rate of $5,500. I similarly calculated the cost to implement winterization measures by using the approved DOBREV winterization plan. In doing so, the maximum prescribed penalty for this requirement would be $8,614, which would accrue at a daily rate of $5,500. For the completion report, I again selected the median cost from the range in the cleanup order. After adjusting for inflation and adding 10%, the maximum prescribed penalty for this requirement would be $7,667, which would accrue at the daily rate of $1,100. To summarize the information that we have presented to you today, the respondent has violated and continues to violate the cleanup order, which authorizes the board to issue the proposed order. Issuance of the proposed order is consistent with the cannabis program enforcement strategy and the region's enforcement priorities. The deadlines contained in the proposed order are appropriate to ensure an approved restoration plan is fully implemented before the next wet season. The penalties prescribed in the proposed order are reasonably necessary to achieve compliance. These amounts are intended to motivate the respondent to comply and would only be imposed if the respondent fails to do so. For these reasons, and as further supported by the prosecution team's pre-hearing submittals, we recommend that the board adopt the time schedule and investigative order as proposed. Thank you for this time. We are available to answer any questions the board members or advisory teams may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation and your diligence on working with this project. Board members, any questions? Jake?
Mr. Chair, through you. What's the current condition of this site? You showed us pictures from back 4 or 5 years ago. It's a passive site now, or is it continuing to add sediment to the water courses?
Yeah, since the respondent hasn't contacted us at all, we haven't had an opportunity to go do an inspection of the site. The only things I've been able to do is look at the most recent aerial imagery that I can obtain to look at the site from that vantage point to see what's going on. But there's been no on-the-ground assessment, current site assessment, and that would be something we would really appreciate that we would like to do.
I'm showing my ignorance here, but are we legally permitted to use drone imagery, flying a drone over that site to get some concept of what's happening there?
That is hypothetically possible. You'd have to do it from a public right-of-way. You'd have to have visual line of sight, and you'd have to follow the appropriate, you know, laws and regulations for flying drones. That's something we can consider, as the Water Board does have an emerging drone program. I would also just want to respond, as you saw in the pictures, the scope and scale of landscape alterations and failures, slope failures at the site are so significant that without the restoration required in the cleanup plan, we have all the reason to believe that the site is still posing a threat to water quality.
Yeah, I just, from my individual point of view, this is what is frustrating about the timelines involved in our enforcement activities on a site like this, in that, you know, there was this demonstrated violations, and now we have this mysterious text out of the wilds of Humboldt County that he's maybe willing to, never mind, you've answered my question, thanks.
I know that the county of Humboldt has a pretty sophisticated satellite surveillance that they have. And when I was on the board, they purchased it, and it's they can go down to, I think it's like 6 feet and still be super clear. Do you guys work with the Humboldt County Planning Department to get any of those images?
We do work with them as needed, and so I can reach out to them. We have our own satellite imagery acquisition process. We also have a helicopter contract, but yes, we do work with the county, and I'd be happy to reach out to them. With that said, if the respondent is apparently interested in complying and working with our staff, then it sounds like we might be able to just get a consent inspection. And that's, I think, would be our preference.
But regardless, we're here to make a decision. Board members?
Just verifying, Kason, are you done, or is your team done presenting right now?
Can we? Yes.
Okay. At the beginning of your presentation, you stated that the whole strategy here is moving older cases along, or you said moving cases along in a strategic way. And I approve of this logic, except it seems that we could be maybe a little bit more proactive or assertive in the timeline, because at this juncture with this program, we've already given respondents opportunity, however many opportunities, to take a bite of the apple. I mean, for heaven's sakes, how long do we need to give them to respond? I feel like we could be a little bit more assertive and actually demonstrate to future, you know, landowners or what have you, hey, we are going to be responsive. We're going to be timely, because it's a waste of your time to kick the can down for a year or whatever that whole timeline was. I mean, it's pretty evident. I feel like we can make a fast track lane here a little bit more. I agree with your logic, but maybe tighten it up more. This is ridiculous that it's this long.
If you mind a response.
Yeah, please.
You know, there are multiple timelines here. There's the timeline, you know, going back to Dobrev, and then even after that, the timelines that we, you know, try to accommodate for getting the cleanup done, and then there's the timeline to proceed. I think that moving forward, now that we have the cannabis enforcement strategy, the intent is to expedite our timelines moving forward, absolutely. And the TSO category for older cases acknowledges that there are some old cases with really long timelines. We have some backlogs, and part of the strategy is to clear that up. And this site is kind of on the cusp of that, of whether or not it's really old, or, you know, whether we could just go to penalty. And
let me interject. Is there flexibility? And I'm terrible with acronyms. What was it? TFO? TSO.
TSO.
Is there flexibility in the TSO guidelines to say, hey, a case that's 1,700 days old, we're going to just go past, you know, move past go and go straight to a penalty within like a very condensed 30-day timeline or whatever it may be. Whereas maybe a case that's, not 1,700 days old, maybe it's only, you know, something significantly less than that, then, okay, you give them a little bit more wiggle room under the TSO. Is there room for that flexibility? Or is the TSO pretty straightforward, everybody gets the same?
No, there is a lot of flexibility. And I'll just point out that, what are we in, May now?
Mm-hmm.
The first deadline that would initiate the accrual of penalties is July 1st. Because we have a series of deadlines, and by July 1st, the respondent needs to acknowledge either their intent to use the previously approved Dobrev plan or to submit a new plan for approval. So there's a series of deadlines, and each deadline that is missed will start to accrue that penalty in a sense. Like, it's not automatic. We will have to come back with a complaint, but it... my point is that there is, it's not like we have to wait till October 31st, which is the end of the implementation period. But the reason we gave the October deadline for implementation is the scope of work necessary to get this project cleaned up is so significant that they will need this construction season to get the work done.
So a TSO fast tracks penalization to incentivize compliance?
I wouldn't say it fast tracks it. What it does is it gives the board the opportunity to predetermine what the penalty would be, so that when we come back with a complaint, it will be much more straightforward for the board to decide on what the penalty will be, because you've already gone through this process. You've already had a chance to look at all Gary's calculations and the different penalties for each different proposed order requirement. And you're effectively, if you adopt it today, you'd be sending the respondent notice that if you fail to comply, these are what the penalties will most likely look like.
And again, I'm doing this is constructive criticism, so please don't take this. Why? What's the reasoning behind July 1? Because that's still, effectively, May 8th? A little less than 60 days out. Why not, hey, 30 days, or if you need a little more time, 45. But, like, it's evident that there are things wrong, and it's been there for a long time. So I'm not understanding
I think the prosecution team would support the board picking a sooner date. If the respondent were to pick the Dobrev plan, they could do that tomorrow. If they were to hire a consultant and come up with a different plan, that does take time. You have to find a consultant, then they have to go out into the site, and so that could take 30 to 60 days. But given the fact that there's already an approved plan, I think we'd be supportive of the board picking a sooner date.
Okay.
At this time, Madam Executive Officer, do you have a recommendation?
I mean, I think it would be my recommendation to adopt the order as proposed. I think, you know, if the board is interested in a 45-day, changing that July 1st date to 45 days, I don't have a concern with that either. I would say this, you know, it takes time to get a consultant engaged to come out and show up to a property, and so the 60 days would, acknowledging that the respondent has had ample time already to take action on this, the 60 days would give the respondent more of a chance to bring out a consultant and get a second opinion and decide if they want to go with the plan that Dobrev prepared or if they want to prepare their own plan. So that could be a reason for 60 days, but I guess my recommendation is adopt as proposed, but if the board is interested in changing that first deadline to 45 days, I don't have any significant concerns with that, and
Thank you. Ryan?
So that date, what I'd be more concerned with is having them contact the board and be working on something instead of waiting for 60 days and say, oh yeah, now I need time to get a consultant. I'd rather see it very quickly, have them at least start working with the water board, and if they don't, then there should be consequences.
I want to back that statement up.
But they have had plenty of opportunity, and who's to say that they'll back out or that they won't back out? So I'm leaning towards going forward, accepting a motion to get this ball rolling, and if he contacts the board or the staff, great.
So meaning keeping the 60-day timeline as is written right now. Is that what we're...
Well, board members, what is your sense, 60 or 45? Does it make a difference?
So how does it work? Would they have 60 days to contact you, or can we make a timeline on how soon they contact you? Because my worry is that they wait the 60 days to contact you and say, I need a consultant, then it takes another 60 days to get a consultant, and they kind of string you along. I'd rather see it, but they have to contact you, at least start working on something very soon, so that at the end of the 60 days, you have a plan one way or the other.
Yeah, I think that if they were to wait till the end of the 60 days, it would not be compliant, frankly, unless they just picked the Dobrev plan at that point, because we already know that that's approvable. What we oftentimes find is that when people hire qualified professionals, the first pass at a draft plan is not acceptable. So the deadline is for them to provide an approvable plan, a plan that is that can be approved. And so if they submit an inadequate plan by that date, they will violate that deadline. And frankly, I'll just point out that the clock is ticking, right? If they squander that time and wait till July 1st, they're very, very likely not going to meet the October 31st deadline. So it's in their interest to contact staff as soon as possible and get the ball rolling. With that, I think Heather has something to add.
And maybe this is more of a question for clarification. Is the board interested in an additional deadline? Because we have the July 1st deadline for providing a proposed restoration plan or that written intent of acknowledgement to use the Dobrev plan. And it seems like if that's the route they want to go, if they want to use the Dobrev plan, that could be provided sooner. And so is the board interested in an earlier date for that written acknowledgement if that's the route that the respondent wants to go, or to alternatively require them to submit a written acknowledgement that they're not going to use that plan, that they're working with a consultant. Is that something that the board is interested in?
I would encourage us to expedite and not wait till July.
So for clarification, expedite the deadline
so 45
for submittal
days
of a
rather
plan?
Than 60.
Okay.
If I may, the twist is Mr. Sexton appears to have reached out and is given a phone number for you to reach back. There's a reason you picked the July 1st date. I don't know what the reason is, but if that's a time frame you're comfortable with, I'm not necessarily comfortable changing, you know, giving a date sooner than that, 45 days or 60 days. The smart thing for them to do would be to accept the DOBRA plan. Until we know that they have not done that, you pick the date for a certain reason. I'm comfortable with staff's.
But they've had years.
They've had years. I totally get it. But
and following their decision trajectory, I would not think they would be compliant.
Okay. I appreciate if the Sextons are listening into this hearing. Thank you for listening in. But they have had a number, a significant amount of time to address this, and so I would like to see a shorter 45 day. I mean, let's go. Let's get off the pot here. And but if the board, I mean, I'm not going to push hard on it, and maybe going forward, exercise. You have the discretion. Use it. Like, let's go. This is a pretty cut and dry type of set of cases, it seems like, that you can apply this to. So don't be bashful. Okay.
Board members, Claudia Villacorta, Assistant Executive Officer in the lead, and I have taken the oath. I just wanted to clarify a little bit what Heather was and the question that was posed to the board in terms of expediting this process. I agree, we want to expedite the process. We want to hear from Sexton as to his intent. So the proposal that we had put forth that I'm recommending might be to add this intermediate deadline where within a week he would provide the actual plan, the DOBRA plan, if that is what he plans on using. And and if that's not his intent, to provide a written notice that his intent is not to use the DOBRA plan and to wait until July 1st to submit a new plan with a new consulting firm.
Just, you know, I
think that's excellent, Claudia. That describes my thoughts.
So, I just have a question, however, though. I mean, this time schedule order is to come into compliance with the existing cleanup and abatement order. And so, does the existing cleanup and abatement order have any requirement regarding the use of the DOBRA plan? So I'm just trying to understand how exactly would you incorporate this intermediate deadline since there's no basis in the original CAO?
The original CAO did include both alternatives for the RMMP.
Okay.
So Sexton was provided the option of submitting written intent to use the DOBRA plan or developing a new plan and submitting that for approval.
Okay, so it is included in the original CA.
Yes.
The options. Okay.
So, Claudia, part of your plan, if he would have a week to get a hold of the water board, if he didn't get a hold of the water board within a week, then what would happen?
Then we would have to calculate a fine based on the same process. So I would think that we would need to take a break. I'll have to consult with my attorney and propose a maximum penalty fine for not submitting that notice.
We're overthinking this.
Right?
We just added another layer of complexity that
we couldn't notice a fine for that one. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm not sure we'd want to add an additional fine. We didn't provide notice of a fine associated with that action.
I think maybe, and this is, I'm feeling we are maybe getting a little too complicated. So if we were to maybe make a motion to approve as proposed, but emphasize in the future, be bold. Just don't pussyfoot around things here, okay? Great.
Yeah, I think what, add on to that, if you don't get a response, maybe we send them a notice, say, if we don't hear from you in this amount of time, this is your fine, you know, and just get right to it and then bring it to us. I think that's what I'm hearing from everyone, instead of giving chance after chance. And I think we need to look through the lens of where we're at with cannabis now, and that it's more expensive to grow than it is to sell it. And so these are going to keep coming and coming, and so we just need to get to it. And not, you know, chances are great, and like our goal is to get it cleaned up, but I think the reality is a lot of these are not going to be able to afford to clean it up. So we just need to do something. We need to get a lien on the property and at least get enough money to give to the state so we can get these things cleaned up on the back end.
And right now you have people who anticipate us dragging our feet, and so it's, they have no incentive. But if we need to change up the training method here.
And I would entertain a motion.
So, excuse me, Chair Bedoya, before, yes. Before you ask for a motion, I would suggest adding a sentence to finding 30 that states Sexton Properties LLC did not appear at the hearing to contest the prosecution's allegations or the draft order.
Thank you, counsel. And I was reminded that there may be members of the public who wish to comment. Anybody? Okay. No. Greg?
I was going to make a motion.
Please do.
I move that we adopt the time schedule order, the investigative and time schedule order for Sexton Properties LLC as proposed and
order number R1-20.
Bunch of X's.
25.
I have an order number for you, R1-2025-0020.
So amended.
Are we including Nate's
amendment?
Is that what you mean?
Yes.
As amended.
Yeah, okay. I second.
Deidre?
Chair Bedoya?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hart?
Aye.
Board Member Giusti?
Aye.
Board Member Sundberg?
Aye.
Board Member McKenzie?
Aye.
Thank you so much. Okay, executive officer's report.
Let's see. I provided some reports at the beginning of the meeting, and I don't have any further verbal reports to provide other than to continue to encourage board and public to take a look at the written executive officer's report. There's some great information there.
Thank you so much. Greg, do you have
I just, Madam Executive Officer, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of what this afternoon's going to bring?
Yes. So before this this session here in this room ends, we are planning to have a closed session to speak to items 10D1, 10D3, and 10D5, I believe, on the closed session list. After that closed session, we will have time for lunch, and then we are all meeting here at 1 o'clock p.m. for the field trip to agricultural operations in the Scott River and Shasta River watersheds. So transportation for that tour is not being formally provided, but we are planning carpools. We will be, we have members of the Siskiyou County Farm Bureau joining us here. We'll arrange carpools. The field trip itinerary is posted on our website, so if there are members of the public that want to join us either starting here at 1 p.m. or want to join us at any point, there are either addresses or coordinates provided for each location and the approximate times we plan to arrive at each location. So I think that's all I have on that, unless there are any other questions or things you want to make sure I highlight here.
Mr. Chair, at the back table you have the maps of all the places.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, so online for those that are not in the room, and in the room, those that information is printed out.
Let me ask board members if you have any requests for future agenda items or other items of interest.
Can we maybe just get a quick update of where things are at with the vineyard order? Or I know we made the decision in February. We just haven't heard anything, so I was just curious.
Yes, so the vineyard order is planned to be brought back to the board at our June meeting. And I was hoping I could find that an email just went out to our listserv about that order that I was hoping I could find, because it provided some additional dates about when our staff plan to post the proposed order and when ex parte communications will be closing. And so if you want me to share that information verbally, I'll just pause and look for that notice, and then I can.
Nope, I didn't. I will, if it's sent out, I'm sure it's in our email, so okay. I'll go take a look. But
I will, if board June members aren't on that distribution list, I'll forward it. But it's basically there's a late May release of the proposed order. A little more than a week later, there's a close of ex parte communications, and 7 days after, members of the public are required to disclose any ex parte communications within 7 days after the communication. And then the hearing is scheduled for the first day of our June meeting, which is Thursday, June 12th in Santa Rosa.
Great.
I believe I saw that come through the email.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Valerie.
Mr. Chair, just sharing conversation that Valerie and I have been having to get an update on a future agenda item for the ONRW, Outstanding National Waters.
Resource Waters.
Resource Waters that this board approved some months ago, 18 months maybe, a year and a half. But anyway, there's two small tributaries, creeks that have been identified that we're working with Caltrout or Trout Unlimited.
Caltrout and a sort of conglomeration of partner organizations.
A partner. So anyway, this was a decision that the board took, and Valerie and Matt St. John's are working on getting that on a future agenda for an update.
Was that a tributary to the Eel River?
Russian.
They're both tributaries to the Eel River.
Oh, they are Eel.
Cedar Creek and Elder Creek. I think they're both tributaries to South Fork Eel River.
Cold Water Refuge, yeah.
I believe so, but I'm not the staff member who's directly engaged with that project, so we can provide more information either offline or certainly at a future board meeting with an update there.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
At some point in time, as I think I mentioned yesterday, the document Expectations for Appointed Regional Water Quality Control Board Members will be reviewed and presumably approved by the governor's office, and then will be required to be distributed to presumably all regional board members who would be affected by it, and also to people who are considering applying for the vacancies that we have. And so there will come that time when the governor's office has approved this document, and I think we should have that as an agenda item at the board meeting so people understand what is required of us, or going to be formally required of us, as we sit at this dais and as we conduct our business away from this dais. Anyway, that would be my request, Mr. Chair.
Once that document has been approved by the governor, can it be posted or put on an attachment?
Yeah, it will be a public document. It won't be private. So.
This draft was distributed at the public meeting, the Water Quality Control Committee.
As a future item, I'd be interested in hearing an update on the development of the Hanson Ponds off of the Russian River in Healdsburg, south of town, as a connection to the Russian River, providing refuge to smolt.
Yeah, great idea. I think that was back last summer or fall that we took a field trip out there, and I imagine that Russian River Keeper would be delighted to provide an update at a point when they have progress to update. So I'll check in with Don McInhill.
They have a new executive officer.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, so we will move on to closed session. And this portion of the meeting is over unless...
We'll have to return to this room to report on the closed session. So I believe the webcast will keep going with a note that says that we're meeting closed session, and then we'll come back here.
And I'll just read off the item that we're going to be discussing in closed session. It's 10D, it's three cases, 10D1, 10D3, and 10D5 as listed in the agenda.
Before we exit, I just want to thank all staff that made the trip up here. Really appreciate it. Just thank you for doing that and all that you do.
And all the support from our state staff as well. What time do you think we should resume? It's 5 after 11.
We're just resuming to report on the closed session, so I don't think we need to. I don't expect that there's public waiting to hear the report on that. So I think we can just resume whenever the closed session is complete, if you're comfortable with that.
Of course. Thank you very much. So we're resuming the meeting. We came back from closed session.
Yes, I can report that the board met in closed session and discussed items 10D1, 10D3, and 10D5, and that there's no action to report out of that closed session.
And the next board meeting would be Thursday, June 12th, 2025, and Friday, June 13th, 2025, in Santa Rosa. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.